It is Tuesday, January 24th, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Sarah Williams in Washington. Coming up, Russia, Turkey, and Iran agree to monitor the Syrian ceasefire. Expectations are high in Turkey for the Trump presidency, and the nominations for the 89th Annual Academy Awards are released. We'll take a look. It's all ahead. Russia, Turkey, and Iran agreed Tuesday to set up a mechanism to observe a ceasefire in Syria as they ended 2 days of peace talks in Astana with officials from the Syrian government and rebels. I spoke with VOA correspondent Daniel Scharf, who's in Astana.
Turkey, Russia, and Iran issued a joint statement saying that they will agree to enforce the ceasefire in Syria together. They made that announcement at a final press conference that took place. It was more of an announcement than a press conference. Now, what this announcement means, it was expected. Yesterday, there was some leaked information that came out that they were working on a draft of this agreement for the organizers of these talks, Russia, Turkey, and Iran, to act as guarantors. In other words, to put pressure on the different sides to enforce a nationwide ceasefire to better cement the ceasefire that was agreed last month. We have had a ceasefire that's been going on now since the end of December. It's largely held in place, but there have been sporadic fighting in different parts of Syria. And the point of the talks here, the main point of the talks here in Astana, was to try and better cement that ceasefire, to bring a full halt to the fighting on the ground, and to try and get some sort of an agreement on humanitarian aid. That was the hope of the opposition rebels. We do have at least this agreement for a trilateral mechanism to ensure this truce in Syria. The Syrian sides did not participate in this final announcement. We didn't see them in the hall. They were not going to sign this document anyway because it was a trilateral agreement between those who brokered the talks here. But of course, there is a lot of speculation and concern about what it might mean that they were not participating directly in this, whether or not they, you know, are fully supporting it, whether or not there is a disagreement among some of the different 13 rebel representatives who were here, or those who did not attend, those who were not invited or who refused to come to the talk.
Yeah, Daniel, weren't the talks expected to continue for a bit longer, or was it expected it would only be for a couple of days?
Originally, there were reports coming out of Russian state media saying that they were expecting the talks to last several days, but the Kazakh hosts of the talks, on arrival of the delegations and just before the talks, as the talks were announced that they were going to happen for sure on the 23rd, of January, beginning on the 23rd of January, they said that they were expecting them to last for 2 days, but they could go on longer if there was need for them to go on longer. Now, even as late as this afternoon, there was at least one, early this afternoon, there was one spokesperson for the rebels, the opposition in Syria, who indicated that the talks could go on until Wednesday if they needed to go on until Wednesday, in order to get this agreement on enforcing the ceasefire by Iran, Russia, and Turkey. Apparently, another day of talks will not be needed because they managed to come to an agreement, the guarantors, the three sides who brokered these talks. Presumably, the talks are done.
VOA correspondent Daniel Scharf reporting from Astana, Kazakhstan. Here are some of the top news stories trending. President Donald Trump meets with auto executives and urges them to have more manufacturing in the United States. An explosion kills 7 Somali policemen just west of Mogadishu. The South China Sea, not trade, is the first point of friction for President Trump and China. And China will crack down on virtual private networks. Expanded coverage of these stories and more are on the VOAnews.com website. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
The
American Heart Association describes heart failure as a weakening of the heart muscle and the inability to pump strongly enough to meet a body's need for blood and oxygen. According to the European Society of Cardiology, about 26 million people throughout the world have heart failure. While it currently cannot be cured, heart failure can be treated and managed. Now, researchers at Harvard University and Boston Children's Hospital have come up with a soft robot sleeve that fits around the heart and helps it beat, offering those with heart failure a new treatment option. The Harvard researchers say that their soft robotic sleeve doesn't come into contact with blood, unlike other devices currently available that help the heart to function. This is something they say decreases the risk of complications such as clotting. I'm VOA's Rick Bantaleo.
This is International Edition on the Voice of America. I'm Sarah Williams. Coming up, we hear about the films nominated for Oscars. Officials in Asia and the Americas are reacting to the decision Monday by President Donald Trump to officially withdraw the United States from the 12-nation Trans-Pacific Partnership Free Trade Agreement. Australian Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said Tuesday the remaining members hope to keep the laboriously negotiated pact alive.
The Trans-Pacific Partnership is all about jobs for Australia. Let's be quite clear about this. We are a trading, exporting nation. We are a trading nation. Trade is 1.5 times as big a share of our economy as it is of the United States. What that means is there is a bigger proportion of Australians whose jobs depend on exports than there is of Americans.
Mr. Turnbull, who spoke with his Japanese, New Zealand, and Singaporean counterparts, said the 11-nation TPP may seek new partners such as China, which has backed other free trade agreements. Mr. Trump insists his executive order Monday is good news for the American worker. His spokesman, Sean Spicer, said bilateral agreements represent better deals for the U.S.
When you enter into these multinational agreements, you're allowing any country, no matter the size, any one of those 12, including us, to basically have the same stature as the United States in the agreement. So we're basically on par with some very small companies who are getting access to an amazing market, the United States. And in return, we're negotiating at the lowest common denominator. And I think that when you look at big multilateral agreements, they're not always in the best interest of the United States. The beautiful thing about a bilateral agreement is that if any one of the two parties in the agreement decides that at any time they want to get out of the agreement or they're not being treated fairly, they can renegotiate it much easier. In a multinational agreement, that's not the case. In many cases, all of the other countries have to agree to an action or to let somebody out. That's not putting the U.S. interest first.
But J.P. Morgan chief economist Masamichi Adachi in Tokyo tells International Edition's Victor Beatty such bilateral agreements are not necessarily a win for both sides.
Japan prefers to have a more multinational trade agreement, but if the U.S. prefers to have a more bilateral free trade agreement, this should be quite tough for the Japanese government.
Why would a bilateral accord be more difficult?
President Trump, his aim to have a free trade agreement in a bilateral manner is to gain the American benefit, meaning that the American jobs and American exports. The U.S. prefers to have a more export to Japan and prefers not to decrease the imports. That's definitely negative for the Japanese economy. If U.S. Goes America first, that means somebody needs to sacrifice.
Can the 11 members of TPP carry the free trade pact forward?
I think potentially, yes, but the U.S. is definitely our biggest partner in this partnership. Therefore, it's getting harder for them to renegotiate their new deal.
What about Australia's suggestion that possibly China could join TPP?
It's not absurd to talk about such kind of a new framework of the global orders, but it's probably too early that we can get the new sense on what's going to happen next.
Masamichi Adachi said when Japanese Prime Minister Shinzo Abe meets President Trump, he will try to impress on him the importance of the bilateral security relationship as well as the benefits of globalization. Gary Huffbauer of the Washington-based Peterson Institute of International Economics tells Victor Beatty the days of the 23-year-old trilateral North American Free Trade Agreement, NAFTA, may be numbered given Mr. Trump's promise to renegotiate the pact in talks with Mexico and Canada.
I think NAFTA will become two bilateral agreements rather than this trilateral accord that it now is. And then there might be a third bilateral between Mexico and Canada. And also Trump has welcomed a possible bilateral with the United Kingdom. So, of course, United Kingdom has to sort out its relations with Europe first.
Analysts interviewed by news media indicate that the 12-nation TPP would have actually reduced prices and boosted sales abroad for U.S. automakers, farmers, and tech companies. Are businesses going to be hurt by this?
Oh, yes. By our reckoning, the U.S. loses quite an opportunity to expand its exports by probably $100 billion when it was totally implemented and have higher standards in all the TPP countries than otherwise will be the case. So we think it's a big loss of opportunity. Obviously, the Trump team looks at it in a different way.
Well, they're saying that American workers have been overlooked and American industry gutted.
The gutting, which is talked about, is mainly a technology phenomenon, which is very, very strong in every industry. And that has, in fact, changed a lot of jobs in our economy. President Trump looks at all the factories that have been closed. 9 out of 10 are closed because of technology, not because of trade.
Gary Huffbauer said the U.S. withdrawal from TPP gives China a big diplomatic opening, but to take advantage of it, Beijing will have to improve its policies on market liberalization and reverse the current trend of greater restrictions on market access. Well, meanwhile, the inauguration of U.S. President Donald Trump is ushering in an era of expectation in NATO member Turkey, with the hope of resetting bilateral relations, which became severely strained under his predecessor, Barack Obama. Dorian Jones reports from Istanbul.
Turkey's pro-government media, usually critical of the United States, welcomed the inauguration of President Trump. Turkish presidential spokesman Ibrahim Kalın spoke warmly of the new president, saying the Trump administration has a perspective that will guarantee Turkey's sensitive position in the region. Our Monitor website, Turkish political columnist Semih Diz, says with bilateral ties severely strained under the Obama presidency, there is hope Trump can put relations back on track.
Trump is going to be more amenable towards the Erdogan government than many people assume. And I think this is what Ankara is relying on. Now, they have common enemies, and I think that they will try and concentrate on that. So, yes, the government is expecting more from the Trump administration than it got from the Obama administration.
Prime Minister Binali Yildirim last week spelled out what the Trump administration needs to do to reset relations. On the list was speeding the extradition of US-based Turkish cleric Fethullah Gulen, accused of being behind a failed coup last July. Yildirim also has demanded that Washington end its military support of the Syrian Kurdish group, the PYD, which is fighting to capture Raqqa, the Islamic State's group's self-declared capital. Ankara accuses the PYD of being linked to Kurdish insurgents in Turkey. Consultant Attila Yeşilada of Global Source Partners warns Ankara is likely to be disappointed, especially in light of recent comments at last week's Senate confirmation hearing for Secretary of State nominee Rex Tillerson.
The extradition of Gulen is a judicial matter on which Trump has very little control. And PYD doing a good job marching on Raqqa. I don't see Trump immediately interfering with this relationship. Rex Tillerson, the new Secretary of State, he also defended the Kurds as well in allies, and he said the U.S. will be fighting Muslim Brotherhood, which is ally of Erdogan.
Columnist Adiz says there is the need for a lowering of expectations, but there is still reason to be cautiously optimistic for bilateral relations.
Obama was seen as the panacea to everything, and it didn't work out. So I think this is an endemic situation, you know, sort of that you're going to be disappointed no matter what. But I think that we will see a change of tone under the Trump administration in relations between Turkey and the United States. So I think that is what really a lot of people are looking for, rather than any sort of panacea or a magic wand that will fix everything overnight.
Analysts say relations could be strained further over the Trump administration deliberations to move the US-Israeli embassy from Tel Aviv to Jerusalem. Trump's strong backing of Israel's settlement-building program on the West Bank and in Jerusalem is also likely to cause Ankara concern. Turkish President Recep Tayyip Erdogan voiced his concern Sunday, saying he is hearing disturbing words from Trump on the Middle East. Dorian Jones for VOA News, Istanbul.
This is VOA.
When news breaks, VOA Africa is there, bringing you news as it happens. Listen to Africa News Tonight, Monday through Friday at 1600 and 1800 UTC. And our five-minute newscasts come to you at the top of each hour. VOA Africa, your trusted source of information.
Hi, I'm Nikki Strong. You love music? How about Blake Shelton and Carrie Underwood? Or Merle Haggard and Loretta Lynn? Experience the best in country music on Country Hits USA. I bring you some country rock, outlaw, a little hillbilly, contemporary, and more, with a dash of entertainment news, too. So join me for Country Hits USA on VOA 1, the voice of America.
This International Edition. The nominations for the 89th Annual Academy Awards have been announced. I spoke with VOA's Penelope Pulu about the nominations for this year's top film prizes.
First of all, La La Land, which got 14 nominations, tying with Titanic. This is really a movie of Titanic proportions,
yeah,
on so many levels. It's a beautiful film. It's a musical, but it has dramatic undertones and reminds us of period American musicals like An American in Paris, Singing in the Rain. So it has a lot of popularity. A lot of people want it to win, but it does have competition.
Yeah. Now, who are some of its rivals?
Manchester by the Sea. It is a high drama. It's a simple story, a story that you can really tell in one paragraph, but it has been delivered with such pathos and such amazing performances and such wonderful editing in music and in film that it leaves you completely devastated when you leave the movie theater. So it is a very different film, but it is an equal.
And what are some of the other films that have been nominated?
Arrival. Arrival is a sci-fi picture, got 6 nominations, with Amy Adams as the lead actress, who delivers an incredible performance. What makes it different? Usually sci-fi films don't get nominations, but what makes it different is it is almost a spiritual film. And it is, again, edited and directed in such a way that it is very, it's not kitschy, it's very classy. You can imagine things instead of looking at things, and it delivers a message. So it is cut above your average sci-fi film.
Now, I know that the Academy Awards last year, there was a lot of criticism because some observers felt there were not enough actors of color that had been nominated. What is it like this year?
This year is definitely far more diverse. There is a film called Moonlight. This is a film that has a lot of cutting-edge messages, such as sexuality and homosexuality, especially in the Black community. A lot of voters, you would think that they wouldn't go for this approach for the Oscars, but the supporting lead actor, Mahershala Ali, delivers an exceptional performance, and he's the front runner in this category. Again, Moonlight has also been slated for one of the best films of the year, but I do not believe that it's going to win over La La Land or Arrival. There is a lot of diversity among black actors who got nominations this year. Octavia Spencer received the Oscar, the nomination for supporting lead for the film Hidden Figures. Denzel Washington got a nomination for lead actor for his film Fences, which, by the way, he also directed. Viola Davis got a nomination for supporting actress for Fences, and she is the front runner in that category. And of course, again, as I said, Mahershala Ali, who also is considered to be a front runner for Moonlight in the supporting actor category. So we have a lot more to choose from. Whether that's going to be the choice, of course, it depends on the over 6,000 voters for the Oscars. We'll see.
All right, and that's VOA's Penelope Pulu. Well, a years-long Twitter spat between the new White House spokesman and an ice cream company may finally be over. Dippin' Dots, which is described as tiny beads of ice cream, sent an open letter to Sean Spicer addressing some old tweets the new spokesman posted, complaining about the product. Now, Spicer took on Dippin' Dots between 2010 and 2015, disputing the company's claim that it's the ice cream of the future. Spicer also once tweeted his disappointment that an ice cream stand in a Washington-area sports venue had run out of vanilla-flavored dots. Dippin' Dots appears to want to put all of that in the past. In a letter, Scott Fisher, who's the company's chief executive, said, "We've seen your tweets and we'd like to be friends rather than foes." After all, he said, "We believe in connecting the dots." The company also took issue with Spicer's comment about dots not being the ice cream of the future. Fisher wrote, "As you may or may not know, Dippin' Dots are made in Kentucky by hundreds of hardworking Americans in the heartland of our great company. As a company, we're doing well and we're creating jobs and opportunities. We hear that's on your agenda, too." The company even offered to bring Dippin' Dots to the White House so the press could have an ice cream party. That sounds pretty good. Well, that's our show for today. Please remember to visit our website at voanews.com. I'm Sarah Williams. Thanks so much for joining us.
Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
From time to time, the United States identifies certain individuals as crucial to the operation of terrorist organizations. Most often, these are top leaders, or they help finance terrorist organizations. In all cases, these are people who have committed or are deemed to pose a significant risk of committing acts of terrorism. When such people are identified, the U.S. government places their name on the specially designated nationals list. Their assets within U.S. jurisdiction are immediately frozen, and they are locked out of the global financial network. No U.S. citizen or company may conduct business with a designated individual. In this way, the United States disrupts financial support networks for terrorists and terrorist organizations. In early January, the United States Department of State named as a specially designated global terrorist Hamza bin Laden, a son of global terrorist and founder of the Al-Qaeda terror network Osama bin Laden. Hamza bin Laden, born around 1989, was officially named an Al-Qaeda member in a 2015 audio message by Ayman al-Zawahiri, who has headed the terror group since the 2011 death of Osama bin Laden. As part of the same audio message, Hamza bin Laden threatened attacks against the United States as well as Americans abroad. He also called for lone offender attacks against U.S., French, and Israeli interests in Washington, Paris, and Tel Aviv. Similarly, in a message issued in the summer of 2016, Hamza bin Laden called on tribes based in Saudi Arabia to unite with al-Qaeda's affiliate in Yemen and together to wage war against the Kingdom of Saudi Arabia. The State Department's designation serves notice globally that Hamza bin Laden is actively engaged in terrorism. Designations of terrorist individuals and groups expose and isolate them and serve as a useful tool to assist or complement the law enforcement actions of other U.S. agencies as well as other governments.
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government. For a transcript of this and other VOA editorials, or to receive editorials by email, visit the VOA Editorials Internet homepage at www.voanews.com/editorials. The following